Let's take a journey back to 2003. Canadian teen sensation Avril Lavigne was topping the charts and turning the music industry upside down. But what if I told you that the Avril Lavigne we know and love might not be the same Avril? What? Did Avril die? Was she replaced by a doppelganger? I'm Joanne McNally, and I'm doing a deep dive into a notorious internet conspiracy. Who replaced Avril Lavigne? Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. When you think about ballet, what comes to mind? You probably think of, like, the Nutcracker or Swan Lake, you know, the point shoes, the tutu. Emma Portner is an acclaimed choreographer and dancer. She's choreographed for the likes of Justin Bieber, Maggie Rogers, and the Norwegian National Ballet. She's the youngest woman in history to have choreographed a West End musical in London. And yet, it wasn't that long ago that Emma, who's from Ottawa, considered walking away from all of it. Her recent work, Islands, is pushing boundaries within ballet for a bunch of reasons. For one, it's having two women lift and partner one another. It also challenges some of the conventions of ballet that I just talked about, like the tutu, or stuff like having dancers mirror what a choreographer does for them. Emma joined me over Zoom from Sweden ahead of the North American premiere of Islands at the National Ballet of Canada. And we started out by talking about what it's like to have her work come home. Here's our conversation. Emma, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
How, let's start patriotically. As a Canadian, any feelings coming with having this work with the National Ballet of Canada?
I mean, incredible to me. It's kind of, I mean, the National Ballet of Canada, when I was growing up, was like the home company. It was like the ideal as a young dancer in Canada. And I went to the National Ballet summer school when I was like 11, 12 type of thing. And I wanted to go to the full-time company in school so badly, but my mom said no. It took me like many years to forgive her for that. But somehow I've made it back to the National Ballet of Canada through the back door in this other kind of alternative way. And I'm super grateful. But yeah, totally, totally nice to be making work and resetting this work in Canada. It's the first time that my work has come to Canada in this sort of official way.
Why
is wild.
Why did she say no?
Oh, I don't know. I think because maybe she just didn't want to let me go, because it was like, because I'm from Ottawa. So Toronto was a bit of a stretch. And then, I don't know, I think in hindsight, she made the best decision for me because I got this like really diverse upbringing of like music and dance and different styles and an arts high school and moving to New York very young and all of the things. So I actually kind of respect her choice in hindsight, but
it's always nice when there's no grudges being carried at this point. Your story I find interesting anyway, because typically when I have spoken to dancers and choreographers, the trajectory normally goes, they dance for a career. And then at some point, they moved to choreography. When I was doing research for this interview, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it was really early on, like 8 or 9 years old, that you kind of said to yourself, like, maybe dancing's not for me, or I don't feel like I'm progressing well enough as a dancer. I want to get into choreography now. Is that right?
I mean, I've just had this like unbearably backwards life. And I don't know what it is about me or like what it is that happened to me or what it is that I'm being asked of by the universe. But I feel like I've had a really backwards kind of dance career for sure. Backwards life, yes. Well, so the thing is that I actually wasn't a very good dancer for a really long time when I was a kid. I was that kid like in the class that like couldn't do the splits, had really weird proportions, didn't really, like I was really shy. I was really anxious as a kid. So I just never really got the opportunities that the other kids had when I was really, really younger. Really, really young. And then, I don't know, maybe it was around like 15 or so when I started making dances in my bedroom and on my friends and things like this. But so because I didn't have the natural talent, the skill, I just sort of had to resort to this, all of these other elements of dance, like musicality or creativity or emotional storytelling or all of these other facets of dance. And that that always worked out for me. But also, I went to an arts high school, so I got to learn how to light for tech very young, and I got to, you know, go to the pottery room at lunch and like explore all these other avenues for creativity. And also, I found Ottawa really, really boring when I was growing up. So I just, on my weekends or nights, I would just make dances for fun, and I would like ticket my parents or make my brothers be in it or that type of thing. But I just started a lot younger than most people, in part because I wasn't good as a dancer. I never thought I was bad though. I never thought I wasn't going to make it as a dancer. I actually only ever tried to make it as a dancer. And then I did one video when I was 17 with my friend Matt Luck, and that just like blew up. And then I've had my whole career from that one chance video that changed the entire trajectory of my life from that one video that I did called Dancing in the Dark. And then, yeah, basically, I just feel like I was kind of plucked from obscurity and was kind of put into this position without knowing actually what it is that a choreographer does, or actually having any sort of handle on what it is that I was doing. And that's sort of been the principle of my life. I feel like, A, the most like unlucky, lucky person ever. B, the hardest working, most lucky person ever. And C, I just have no idea what I'm doing a lot of the time. And that kind of, I don't know, I guess I've always embraced that.
Well, I think I understand that a bit more now, because I have to admit, when you were talking about the idea that like, hey, maybe it was good that my mom wouldn't let me go to the National Ballet School because I got to take in a broad range of influences. I was thinking, well, you know, what you did miss out on there is a really conventional path of like, this is how you choreograph, this is how you dance. And it's really interesting to talk to you in the context of this show, Islands, which is, I mean, to me, what I find really interesting about it is how much of like the conventions of ballet that it sort of defies. And I kind of want to get into that a little bit. You know, one is, you know, when I think about ballet and I don't know if you can tell from the beard, I don't think about it that much. But when I think about the ballet, though, you know what, I'm making self-deprecating jokes that aren't actually true. It's the art form that
No, but actually, I don't think about ballet that much.
Yeah. The we'll talk about that a little bit later, your relationship with ballet. But when I do think about ballet, I think about sort of the great emoji of ballet, which is the tutu. The tutu is the symbol to a lot of people of ballet. So I just want to get into sort of the nitty gritty of the show before we talk broader about it. And one of the things is that you were influenced by the symbolic nature of the distance provided by the tutu, and that's something you wanted to eliminate from the show. Can you talk to me a little bit about that, about how you were feeling about the tutu, where your thinking was?
Totally. I mean, when I got this call to make this ballet, originally it was commissioned by the Norwegian National Ballet. I had almost been thinking about quitting dance for a couple of years and going back to school, and, you know, this was height pandemic, like, era of life.
What were you going to do at school?
Big kind of environmental studies.
Why?
Yeah. Because I love having my hands in the dirt, and I love farming, and I love growing things. And I just think, I think also too, because I've grown up in a studio context, which is very institutional and really clinical sometimes. Like, you're just in this like white box all day. You know, that's a tangent, but the tutu. So I was taking time off from, you know, dancing and making dance. I got the call, and I said no to doing this. I said no to like making this ballet. And then a couple months later, she called me, the director of the Norwegian National Ballet called me back and was like, I really think you should consider it. And then so I finally said, okay, I'll do it. I'll do one more ballet in my life. And I was so stressed at the time that I was like, I can't handle anything with like, I can't handle a big production. I can't handle like a 60-person ballet to like an orchestral piece. I can't do any of that. So I'll do a duet. It'll be two women and it'll be enough. And that's just sort of the baseline of my idea going into it. And the only sort of main conceptual costuming idea I had going into this creation was the tutu, because it's historically separated women's hips like 4 feet apart for the entire history of ballet. So I was like, what if I just do the opposite costuming construct of that and just bind them together?
Let me just pause there, because I think for people who aren't ensconced in the world of dance, they haven't thought about the tutu that way. They've only ever seen it as costume, or like and a truly costume for ballet. Like Batman has a Batman suit and a ballerina wears a tutu. But I had never thought that I think if you picture it, I had never thought that it actually extends the hips out so that people can't get that, women generally can't get that close to one another.
Exactly. And it's so annoying to partner the tutu. And yes, it's structural, but it kind of folds every now and then if you have to get close into a lift or something. But it's so annoying. You can't actually get close to people in a tutu. You can't actually sort of be free and unhinged, and you can't be a free soul. So I just think eradicating the tutu, A, at the time was, it wasn't unheard of, but I think the way that I did it, which was to actually like tie the hips together for two women, was actually kind of radical at the time.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, my conversation with the choreographer, Emma Portner.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with the Canadian choreographer and dancer, Emma Portner. We've been talking about some of her beginnings in dance and choreography, and about her piece called Islands. It's making its North American premiere at the National Ballet of Canada. Emma, as you heard there, is interested in defying the conventions around ballet, including the tutu. And she's been talking about how one of the things that the tutu does is it keeps women from getting too close together, like it keeps their hips apart. But in Islands, she does the exact opposite. She has two women dancing, actually wearing one pair of pants at the same time. So you might have heard Emma just tell you that that idea of getting rid of the tutu was pretty radical. I asked her why.
I'm talking about the context of big, institutional, archaic ballet structure. And I think at the time, so I made this ballet 2018, 2017 type of thing. But If there were a queer ballet or pairing, a lot of the time it happened because maybe the lead got sick and then the only other person who knew the role was a same-sex pairing, so then the people would go together. But at the time, there were really such few female-female duets. I mean, when you think of like all of the ballet, you know, quintessential ballet pieces, it's like Romeo and Juliet, Swan Lake, you know, the Nutcracker, you know, all of these things. There's no quintessential ballet duet with two women. But I didn't want to do it in a way where it was like, I'm doing a queer duet and that's all that matters. You know, I actually wanted to do a queer duet with a lot of nuance and a lot of complexity and a lot of, you know, queer relationships can exist with complexity too. Mm-hmm. And there's other things that can take place in this piece. So I think that's when people, ask me about like why Islands is maybe the success that it is, or why people relate to it, is because I didn't like force anything on people. I just like offered this option, you know.
You are not forcing anything on anybody. However, you are asking dancers who are in institutions, dancers who are in major institutions like these big, you know, National Ballet of Canada, Norwegian Ballet, you know, are asking them to unlearn things that they may have spent their entire career learning. For one, the idea of like, I mean, in Islands, two of the two dancers are in the same pair of pants together. So there's no completely attached. Like there's no separation, the kind of classical ballet one. Another thing is, for people who don't know, I mean, a lot of choreography in these institutions I've learned is about mirroring, is about the idea that like, as a choreographer, I'm going to show you something with my body. You are then going to mirror that back to me. And that's going to be the dance that we perform on stage. When it comes to all of this, I mean, it's one thing to get an institution to change their path. It's another thing to work with dancers who have learned one thing. I mean, Heather Ogden's been working at the National Ballet. I mean, she's an icon of ballet. When you're working with these dancers who have been around for a really long time and have learned one thing, and you have to go in and do all this unlearning, how is that for you?
This is such a good question. And yes, just such a good question as far as like ballet goes, because you're dealing with also making rep that is hopefully made to be passed down to other people, other dancers. And when I was making this piece, I thought there's no way any other company's ever going to want to buy this piece or commission this piece or pass it down or have their dancers learn it. I just thought this is special to these two dancers that I made it on, and it'll never have a life beyond this. That was my thinking at the time, or I thought it was so far out there. But then Hope Muir, the director of the National Ballet of Canada, had sent me an email wanting a new commission for 2025. And I was like, I don't have any time this year, but I have this piece that's pre-made that has only had like a couple shows because of the pandemic, and I'd love to show it to you. And basically she saw the video and she was like, we'll take it. And I was like, what? Like, no way. And then, you know, but with Islands though, every time I go to reset it or go revisit it, I make sure more than any other piece that I've ever done ever, that there's like at least a 2-week period where I can just get to know the dancers and kind of like prepare them to enter the work, which doesn't happen always. In ballet, sometimes you can go in and just set the steps and be really kind of militant about it. But that's also not who I am. So I really take a lot of pride in getting to know the dancers and getting to know, you know, the paths that they've walked and danced and the pieces that have formed them, you know. So me coming into the National Ballet of Canada was really beautiful because they were also ready to meet me in this kind of stripping down of traditional ballet.
What? Give me an example of a question you might ask a dancer when you're trying to strip down their sort of expectations around what they've done in the past or figure out what they've done in the past. Like what's an example of a conversation you might have had to get ready for this one?
I mean, this sounds simplistic and maybe elementary, but even as far as like, is it okay if I enter your space to demonstrate this thing versus let me just walk in the room and take your body and lift it up in the air and push it that way. Like even things like this, where we sit down and discuss what is it to be woman in this field and how has it been and how can we change it, you know? And I'm not saying that I'm some like god fairy of ballet. I'm not.
Oh, good. Cause that was my next question.
And I have all my, I was like, oh my gosh, I hope the thing is not like Emma Horner, God fairy of ballet. No. That's not what I'm saying. But I do think because I don't come from the framework of ballet, I don't have the same rules. I don't have the same, fear. Maybe I've never had anyone, you know, really, I mean, anyone, I just didn't grow up in the traditional ballet structure, but I didn't like, my brain wasn't formed within it and neither was my body. So when I enter the space with dancers, it's a bit more holistic. And actually, you know, I ask questions like, how is your knee okay today? How's your body feeling today? How are the minds? Are we overwhelmed? Are we, you know, all sorts of questions I ask. But as far as stripping the ballet goes, you know, that's such a nuanced and complex question. Because there's the misogyny that we've all faced, but then there's the actual physical structure of ballet, which is, I think of it like an alphabet in a way. And I'm working within the alphabet, but there's like endless possibilities within this framework. But their bodies are trained in a certain way, you know, and sometimes to get people to release their spines or to like, even the physics of partnering a woman for female partners, that's different. Most of these, like Heather Ogden, for example, probably had never lifted a woman before I came in.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting process to kind of spend a couple weeks being like, oh, this is where I have to put my weight and this is how I have to shift my hips back and this is how I have to compensate or put more momentum into this lift versus a muscling or a locking of bones. It's just a different physics too, which is really fun. And I'm happy to take the time to do it. Not many people are, I think.
But I guess, and maybe this is a good way to close things up. Why are you happy to take the time to do it? What I mean by that is that, like, you have built a really remarkable career outside of conventional dance. I mean, even that first story you told me that, hey, things really happened for me pre-Instagram, pre-TikTok, but through a viral video. You want to talk about how that's different than showing up and doing point for Swan Lake when you're 16 and getting a gig? No disrespect to that, but it's super different. You would be super forgiven for never wanting to be part of that world ever. And I find this interesting in the same way that I find, like, people who come up in DIY punk who enter pop music interesting. What is it about ballet that you want to evolve? What is it about the traditional structure about ballet that you find interesting, you want to work in? Why would someone like you, who's an outsider, because there's something interesting there, there's something going on that you want to, you like working in these traditional spaces?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is the discipline of ballet. I am so attracted to the discipline it takes and the courage it takes. It's like such a rare breed of human that can do ballet. And I find them just, I find ballet dancers just some of the strongest, beautiful people I've ever met. Like, their willpower is so unlike other pedestrian people. I don't know. So there's something about the discipline of ballet that I find just outstanding and almost miraculous, a bit divine. And there's something about, with me, because I have a bit of a ballet background and I respect the form because I grew up in it, I'm not coming in and just saying, you know, let me just tear this all apart and all of the ways in which all of you have trained for so many years, let me just throw that out the window and let me kind of give you whiplash. No, I come in and I actually respect the form and I'm trying to use it. But I'm trying to push it into a relevant place, because the pieces that ballet companies are bringing back from 100 years ago, you know, a lot of problems there. And we have to be making new rep at this point. Otherwise, ballet is going to go away. And I love it so much. I think it's such a beautiful form when it's done right. And when it's done well, you know, and people have agency and people have the freedom to kind of have a say in what's happening in the room and happening on stage and what their bodies are wearing and all of these things. So I think there's just a lot of room for change in the ballet world. And that isn't to say I'm the only person who can do it, but I really, really enjoy the challenge.
I love hearing it, because what I'm hearing there is, I think, subversion when you love the thing is so much more powerful than like destructive subversion. And I'm so sorry that, I'm so sad that we only have a couple of minutes here, but I'd love for you to come back and we'll go through the whole thing about your whole life in choreography and all that stuff and how all this worked out. But I'm so excited to see the show. I'm so happy the National Ballet is doing this show, and I'm so happy you took a little bit of time to talk to us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really, really appreciate it. And agree, let's talk again soon.
I can't wait. That was my conversation with the Canadian choreographer and dancer Emma Portner. Her piece Islands makes its North American premiere tonight as part of the National Ballet of Canada's Winter Triple Bill at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts. It runs until March 24th. And that is it for us today. The other conversation we have up today is with the Quebecois actor Evelyn Prochu. She's part of this new romantic comedy, which is this marrying of Quebecois cinema and Hollywood actors. Zach Braff's in it and Vanessa Hudgens. She has a lot to say about language and how language guides her in what roles she chooses. And she has an amazing story about learning how to speak English from watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Go check that out. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.